Welcome to the 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick. We've heard the phrase a lot in the past week, social distancing. It's what public health experts say all Americans should be doing to keep the coronavirus from spreading and to prevent overwhelming our country's healthcare system. People of all ages, even those without underlying illnesses, have been asked to dramatically limit their interactions with others and just stay home. But when everything from sporting events to movies at the theater to dinner parties with friends is suddenly canceled, it can be hard on our mental health, especially for those who may already be prone to depression and anxiety. Today, we wanted to offer some advice for handling this new era of social distancing, both for adults and for kids. We're joined now by Tara Powell. She's an assistant professor of social work at the University of Illinois, and her research focuses on post-disaster behavioral health for young people. She developed an educational program to help children find positive coping strategies in response to trauma and stress after a natural disaster. Tara, welcome back to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And for some strategies for adults dealing with social distancing and advice on how to keep the peace at home with your new coworkers, I'd like to welcome back Julia Bozarth. She's a licensed clinical professional counselor in Normal with Elliott Counseling Services. She specializes in behavioral health, family issues, and coping skills. Thank you so much for joining us on the 21st, Julia.
Thank you so much.
Of course, we are also practicing our social and physical distancing by having them call in remotely. And if you want to ask questions or share your thoughts on how you're dealing with social distancing, please give us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. Julia, I'd like to start with you. This is an unprecedented event, especially for Americans, when things we used to take for granted are suddenly halted and our face-to-face interactions are restricted. Have you been hearing more from your clients about this?
Yes, I have. Oddly, some of my clients who have underlying conditions like anxiety are actually doing better with helping their family understand what this feels like. I just got a text today saying for the first time I feel that everybody knows what it feels like to have an anxiety disorder. And so they've actually been sharing their coping techniques with their family members, genuinely. It's already happened 3 times this week while I'm doing teletherapy.
Interesting. You've also done disaster response with the Red Cross and helped them. In your practice, you know, what tools or experience are you pulling from that to address this issue, coronavirus?
We use some basics. I do on the spot when I'm with somebody who's actually in the emotion, but using the people around the traumatized victim is often the best way to help. So we do a lot of that joining in. In a natural disaster, the first stage is heroism. We're automatically put in a state of shock almost, and the best does come out, and those that are able help. And we're already starting to see that here. And so we build on that, and then the family helps each other. And so we're having family sessions by teletherapy as well, where we're trying to act proactively and create space for each person in the home, and also to specifically set up a structure that works that people can kind of let themselves in and out of so that they're not feeling too trapped with everyone else in the home as well.
Tara, let's turn to you. Your work has focused on trauma recovery for children after natural disasters. You've done research in Moore, Oklahoma after a deadly tornado there and in Texas after a hurricane. Would you say that you're finding some similarities between those events and this issue with COVID-19 and the coronavirus?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a bit different than a natural disaster. Just as was previously stated, we're in an interesting time because we really are in the heroism phase. And so people are bonding together and they're providing lots of resources to each other. And I think we can definitely build on those resources and continue to support each other while this virus is new and there's a lot of unknown. It's kind of like that initial phase of a disaster when there's a lot of unknown. We don't know what's going to happen. And so working together and supporting each other is just so key right now at this phase.
A reminder, you can share your thoughts or ask your questions. Just give us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Tara, children are going to be staying home from school for at least a few more weeks, and they probably have some questions about the virus and what is the virus and how it spread. How do you recommend talking to children about the coronavirus?
Yeah, so it really depends on the individual child. But you also, parent has to think about their different developmental levels. What can they understand? So for younger children, providing them with very clear information in a simplistic way by what you know is coming out of the news, but not having the news on for when you're talking to your, or on in your household, because the children, you know, can hear that over and over again, and that actually can elicit some anxiety. So for younger children, telling them what you know, telling them that, you know, there is a virus and we're trying to keep them safe, and that's why they're out of school right now. For older children, for example, teens, or ones that may be a little bit more privy to the media, asking them what they know and what they've heard from the media, and then, you know, really clarifying any misinformation that they might have. One good tool that I've heard from some parents is before their children wake up in the morning, they can turn on the news just to get updates for themselves. But once the child is awake and up and around, turning that off so that the child isn't getting consistent information over and over again about what's going on with the virus.
I imagine that must be a little bit tough, too, because we have social media and people can get access to any number of apps, especially young people have different mm-hmm. apps than what their parents might be on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one thing that is important for parents is to have clear communication with their child and to help their child feel comfortable talking to them, asking them what's going on, what have you heard, and just have that interactive communication in case they have heard misinformation, and trying to provide them with clear resources on what they might find on the media and where they can get accurate information.
And then let's talk about social distancing. We're not, you know, the students aren't seeing their friends. They're not seeing the teachers they've come to connect with or coaches or whatever. You know, how do you talk to them about that?
Yeah. And so, you know, that really depends on the age of the child. So I was just in a conversation yesterday with a parent, and she was stating how her four-year-old was on the social media with their teacher every morning. And he got really upset because he wasn't able to be there with her. So being calm with your child, especially with a younger child, you know, being patient with them, telling them, you know, this isn't going to be forever, but you do get to see your teacher, and this is going to happen for a little bit. You know, with older children, even, you know, we don't know what exactly is going to happen and how long, you know, how long they're going to be out of school. So I've talked to some older children as well, and they say, you know, I'm really frustrated. Like, this is great because I don't have to be in school. So a 15-year-old that I talked to said, but I can't hang out with my friends anymore. I'm getting bored. And so some things that we talked about her doing is doing FaceTime with friends, playing games. You can also watch Netflix together. So there's all sorts of social media things that you can do in addition to in helping the children try to connect with their friends and people that they don't get to see every day.
Yes, use technology for good at this time.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate to be speaking with Julia Bozarth, a clinical professional counselor in Normal, Illinois. We're also joined by Tara Powell, a professor of social work who specializes in helping children cope with trauma from natural disasters. And we're hearing some strategies to cope with the mental effects of social distancing in the age of coronavirus here. And you can join the conversation. Tweet us now at 21STShow or give us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, that number is 800-222-9455. Julia, what about parents of older children? A lot of them may be heading home from college. We know the U of I has told all students to leave and go back home to their permanent homes. And there are, you know, with in-person classes canceled, and also commencements are being postponed or even canceled. I'm sure they're disappointed about that. What do you recommend talking to your college-aged kid?
Well, I agree with Tara that it's important to listen to that person because that college-age kid is an adult. And it is also a pretty major disruption, especially when you're talking about somebody who's in grad school and might be doing their thesis right now and they just lost their entire population. So do they get to graduate? Seniors who the least of their issues is that they don't get to go to the graduation itself, but they also now are struggling with how do I get jobs? Is there going to be a job? And so I think that the most important thing that the parents can do at this point is try to avoid giving advice and instead practice extremely active listening and make it clear to that child who happens to be an adult that they are welcome in their home. But one of the things that is happening here at U of I and ISU is that some of the kids' parents do not want them to come home. The kids go to school in they live in other states. That means that they have to fly there. So we actually have dislocated, I should say, adult students who are stranded now in central Illinois, and their friends have left. And to me, these are some of the bigger issues that are local that I think that we might want to open up to the population in general and recognize that we now have these kids that were supposed to graduate who can't get on a plane to go home. And the parents, if you do live close enough, if there could be more of a perspective of like a family meeting after the fact. I also think it's important to be pretty flexible as some of the parents are thinking in terms of a couple of weeks. Most people are thinking this is what's going to be happening until the middle of the summer. So I think that when you're bringing adults back into the household, it's more like a roommate meeting than going automatically back to the parent-child situation.
Right. We've all heard that term. And this is my house. These are my rules. But it's a little bit different when they're 18 and they've been out on their own for a while. So that's a great point.
But I also think that the strengths of the younger generations with technological knowledge can be incredibly helpful for their parents and especially for their grandparents. So they can set them up with, you know, what Netflix or online talk groups or even more information. So when we're talking about that young adult, I think that they're an amazing resource. And if the parents could respectfully see it that way, then they might find that it could actually be a really interesting stage if everybody tries to give each other a little space and a whole lot of respect. Also, if parents and or the adult have any underlying conditions like depression or anxiety, they may need to get to a teletherapy therapist so that they can continue to work and survive the same way that doctors are now providing the same thing for the people that are staying home that have underlying health conditions.
Tara, do you have any advice for parents on how to keep the peace with younger children at home? Many of them are trying to also, you know, a lot of folks are trying to work while the kids are at playing or whatever. What do you advise for them?
Yeah, so it can definitely be pretty difficult trying to balance having your child at home, giving them educational time, but also trying to work yourself. So really having a routine is so important throughout the day. That can help the child to understand what's going to happen at what point in the day. And if your child's old enough, also giving them some agency and helping them identify what are the things we need to do throughout the day to build our routine. So I've talked to some parents and they have art time for an hour. And then they have movement or music. So if you can, going outside for younger ones, having them get all that energy out. And then also having a little bit of educational time throughout the day. So there are tons of resources right now, which is so wonderful that parents can look up on what do I do with my child while they're at home. But one thing that is also really important for parents to recognize is they're also going through stress, and sometimes parents may have very high expectations about what they want, their child to learn at home. And they've never homeschooled before. And so lowering your expectations, things don't have to be perfect. And if your child gets frustrated, just be patient with them. Something doesn't go exactly as planned, that's okay. Reassess and readjust. And give yourself some space as well as a parent to be patient with your child and to know that you're going through stress and you need to cope also.
Tara and Julia, there's some great strategies to cope. And I know you're going to join us in the next segment. So when we come back, more strategies on how to maintain our mental health while practicing social distancing. I'm Reginald Hardwick. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick. If you're just tuning in, we've been speaking with Julia Bozarth. She's a licensed clinical professional counselor with Elliott Counseling Services in Normal. We're also joined by Tara Powell, a professor of social work at the University of Illinois, whose research focuses on behavioral health interventions for young people who have experienced a natural disaster. Last segment, they offered some strategies for how to talk to young people and also our older parents who are more susceptible to illness about the coronavirus. And they gave us some tips on how to keep the peace with family or significant others as our homes become our offices in this era of social distancing. And we invite you to join the conversation. The phone lines are open now, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Health officials have asked us to limit social interactions and avoid large groups to slow the spread of the coronavirus. But not seeing friends, coworkers, and loved ones outside of the home is a challenge, particularly for people who live alone and may be prone to feelings of isolation. We'll explore a little bit more on that in this segment. But first, we wanted to play some voice messages that we received from our listeners about how they are doing.
Hold on just a little while longer. Probably my favorite uprising of new mental health opportunity is online song circles meeting together on Zoom to share singing, probably inspired by all the folks singing off their balcony in Italy, but also just because it's a human need and a powerful way to band together and share our hearts, know our power.
I'm home now with a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old for an undetermined amount of time. And one of the things that we're doing to combat all these changes that have come at us so quickly is to try to look for all the positives and see what we've been given as an opportunity. Every time we bump up against something that seems hard or disappointing, we're trying to look at it as, wow, well, now we have time to do this, or we have time to learn something, or we have time to play this game we've always wanted to play, or experience something together, work on those projects, do the things that we haven't been able to do when we've been so busy rushing around during the rest of our previous life. We're also getting outside a lot more. We're just taking time every day, multiple times a day, to go outside and do something. Long hikes, walk with the dog, bike ride. We're fortunate to live rather rurally, so getting outside does not mean running into people. And we're somewhat close to my elderly parents, and so we're able to chat with them safely multiple times during the day. So we still feel connected. We still feel definitely in touch with our friends and everyone that we previously saw so much in our life. But I think for the most part, combating mental health for us is just trying to find those opportunities to see this as a gift in many ways. And, you know, quite ironically, several moms and I have talked recently how it seems like just a month ago we were saying to each other, gosh, we really wish life would just pause for a while so we feel like we can catch up. And here it is. We've been given it. So that's what we're doing.
Hey, my name is Melanie Sibley. I am a licensed clinical social worker here in Champaign. And I hate the phrase social distancing. To me, working with clients that struggle with depression, I feel like social distancing equals isolation equals depression. What I'm doing for myself, and I live alone, so it's challenging for me also. So what I'm doing is daily Facebook Lives on my counseling Facebook page as a way to try and manage my own isolation. I'm calling friends and family every day. I'm doing my Facebook Lives. I'm getting out, I'm walking, and I'm leaving my house, not to be around anybody, but just to leave the four walls. I've developed a fairly consistent routine for myself that makes me feel much better about my life. So I wake up at the same time, walk, tend the dogs, blah, blah, blah. All right. Thanks. Bye.
And a reminder, you can join the conversation as well. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. Julia, you're a clinical professional counselor in Normal. What did you think of those strategies that you just heard?
I thought they were amazing. I thought that these guys should be the guest speakers on your program. They were wonderful. They're also very similar to what people are figuring out on their own, and that the input that the clients have been giving me as well. The lady who was saying, you know, living out in the country or more rural, I have a client who was saying he was so claustrophobic he couldn't take it. So his choice was, even though it was cold, to go fishing. And, you know, he was able to drive in his car away. Nobody's out there. It's cold. But being outside in nature is very nurturing for others. Another takes, who is a healthy grandparent, very healthy, takes the grandchild that she keeps hiking. And, again, it's out in the middle of nowhere, but the child's amused. They're dressed for the weather, and the child is learning all kinds of fun things about nature, but they're outside. And I think that that might be the biggest survival mechanism, is to try to be out there in the fresh air and sunshine, in even if it's cold air. That's particularly good for depression and anxiety. But again, the callers were wonderful, that they shared incredibly important messages.
I think you bring up a good point. We're here in Illinois, and we have so many communities. Of course, we have the Chicagoland. It's more metropolitan, but, you know, downstate, we have so many rural communities and middle, you know, cities, middle metro areas. But there is a lot of open space, and we can take advantage of that without crowding around and potentially infecting each other. Tara,
absolutely.
You are a professor of social work at U of I. What did you think of some of those strategies?
Yeah, I thought those strategies were really wonderful. A few that I heard from the callers was, this is the time you can give life a pause. I was actually talking with somebody yesterday, and they said, this is the perfect time to live in the present. So to notice all of the things, say you're out in nature, to notice everything around you within, you know, within your outside world. Give yourself a pause, give yourself a minute to think, and learn new things. I mean, with children, you take them out into nature, they may not have experienced a lot of different items in the nature that they hadn't known before. And then also looking at the positive. Looking at the positive is so important, because with the unknown, it can cause a lot of anxiety. But looking at all the good things that you have with your family, with your friends, reconnecting with people you may not have been able to connect with before, it's a good time for all of those.
And Julia, was recognizing the woman who the counselor says she lives alone in Champaign. I'm similar. I live alone in Champaign. What advice do you have for people who may feel isolated right now?
I think that, example, we're doing this weekend in my neighborhood. We're all just stepping out on our driveways and having a glass of wine. It's kind of a mid-central Illinois thing that's doesn't compare to Italy, but you know what I'm saying, just kind of reminding everybody and everybody. You just dropped a couple of notes in social media and in mailboxes. So I think that that connection, remember that you can be there. Being alone is, it's very important to use, you know, the phone, maybe write some notes, definitely stay on top of, you know, FaceTime, because you do need that connection. But also, just like Tara said, it's a time to focus on the moment. Like, what is it that you personally want to work on? You finally have completely uninterrupted time, whether it's mindfulness or it's a project in your own house. The contacts may need to be virtual for a while, but nobody said that you can't be outside talking to people in the yard next door at a distance. So I think that's very important, is to maintain some sort of connection, even if it can only be virtual for those who might live in an apartment, and so they can't really get separated from the physical person who happens to be their neighbor. I think living alone is about mindfulness, and it's about projects, and it's about taking really good care of yourself, and especially make sure you're working out. Exercise in your home if that's necessary, but you've got to get exercise.
Julia and Tara, I want to go another direction, because we talked a lot about people with young families and kind of in the earlier parts of their lives. We know there are so many older folks who may even be in retirement communities, or, you know, may live alone in their older years, and they were already kind of being isolated from younger people in their families. I mean, what advice do you have for them to also not feel so feel so alone at this time? Julia, I'll start with you.
I would urge them to use their phones. Many are not technically savvy. I would also ask anyone who knows these people to think in terms of having your children create cards and letters and notes. I think that they are at risk of isolation, and even those who live on their own are finding that the doctors recommend that they stay put even if they're ill, because they're too weak. So I think that we as a community, this is where the heroes step in. Yes, I have no doubt that the people who are alone feel isolated, but the community might want to think about doing things like dropping off food, dropping off cards, dropping off notes, making telephone calls. And for those who are able-bodied and living on their own, the same thing happens. Try to get outside, get some fresh air. Might be time to work on your garden. Might be time to keep a journal. But most importantly, if you are able, try to at least get out and walk on your own or do some sort of fitness, because you need to keep moving, especially in your isolation.
Tara, what is your advice?
Yeah, you know, I think everything Julia said is, you know, really, really important. I was just talking with my neighbor yesterday, and she has a parent in a father in assisted living. She said she can't go and see him because they're locked off, just, you know, to keep them safe from the coronavirus. She said what they've been doing is they've been FaceTiming. And it's so funny because he's not necessarily technologically savvy. So she's been teaching him, how do you FaceTime? How do we do this? And also she's been doing it with her daughter and with his granddaughter as well, to try to keep him engaged so he's not so lonely there. I also love the idea of what Julia said in terms of writing letters. One thing that parents can do if the children are not able to see their grandparents, one thing they can do is they can work on writing a letter to their grandparent, or if they're younger, drawing pictures. And I think that's another way to keep people feeling like they're still connected, even though they may not be able to see their children and their grandchildren during this time.
Good old-fashioned letters, and a good also takes up a lot of time for kids as well. So.
Absolutely.
You know, it's probably expected that we're going to feel a little bit more blue, more anxious than usual, But what are some signs that a person may be experiencing depression or anxiety? And how should they seek professional help? Because usually you do that in person. I mean, you know, is that changing the way you're seeing folks, Julia?
Well, Elliott Counseling went to teletherapy last weekend. And so anyone who's experiencing, I am assuming that there are other agencies that are doing the same thing. So anyone who's particularly concerned and experiencing it for the first time would call into the office the way they normally would. The only difference would be that it would be done on FaceTime, basically, in a HIPAA-compliant way. But the things that I'm concerned about outside of how you contact a person is we do, I agree so much with what Tara was saying, and that is each person, not necessarily the entire household, depending on ages, does need to create some form of structure. If you sleep until 10, that's fine. If you sleep until 10, if you sleep until noon, that's fine too. But then what do you do at noon? Structure is very important. What we're watching with depression specifically is a major change in sleep, plus or minus, a major change in attitude specific to enjoying things that you usually do or not enjoying what you would normally do, changes in behavior, and overall feelings of sadness and hopelessness, and then any major change in eating, not necessarily because you're bored. Anxiety, if you're having a panic attack, I've got a couple of things that I would recommend right away, and that is exhale and start counting backward. So you exhale, and then you inhale and you say 100. And then you exhale and you inhale and you say 99. And you keep going. And more than likely, by the time you get to 70, that feeling goes away. If it comes back, start again. Fresh air, the reason I'm saying this, fresh air and exercise, is they are the best holistic way of managing low-grade depression. Obviously, if you're in a high-grade level, we need to get right to that. That's where you call 211 in Bloomington Normal, and PATH can help you find assistance. That's where you call your doctors, and that's where you call your therapists or perhaps your friend's therapists and see if you can get in. Anxiety itself responds well to things like seriously taking a shower that's slightly cool, drinking ice-cold water, inhaling ice, actually putting it in your hands in a dishcloth and inhaling that ice cold air. It opens up the bronchi so that you do feel as if you're breathing correctly. But again, the simple ones are going to be basic sleep hygiene, creating a healthy structure that's still flexible to the situation, getting as regular meals as you can, trying to avoid the junks and the sugars because that's setting you up. I don't mean you can't have any, but it could set anybody up to have mood swings when they can't just go work it off and eat whatever they feel like eating. And the exercise manages the energy. So sleep, exercise, and lots and lots and lots of ice water. And filters on your sink might be cheaper and easier on the long run than going and buying bottled water.
Wow, that's great advice. I want to thank our guest today, Tara Powell, professor of social work at the University of Illinois, who researches trauma, recovery, and resiliency in children. We've also been speaking with Julia Bozarth, a counselor at Elliott Counseling Services in Normal. We thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you can join us again in the coming weeks, because I think we're going to need to talk with both of you again.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after the break, we'll revisit our conversation about some of the difficulties that bare-bones healthcare plans can pose, especially for mental health. This is The 21st.